call this meeting of Senate Hess to order for April 11th. Welcome Senator Lehman, Senator Green, myself, Senator Wilkin. Senator Ellis is out of town on business, and Senator Ward is due, in fact overdue. So, order of business today is I would like to pass Senate Bill 102 out of committee on to Senate Finance. House Bill 147 will be next, state boarding schools and charter schools. Senate Bill 134, having to do with homeschooling education, will be next. And then Senate Bill 17, criminal transmission of HIV, will be the fourth item of business. Morning, Senator Ward.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
And we have on teleconference Eagle River, Juneau, Wasilla, Anchorage, Ketchikan. And we'll get to you folks. So Senate Bill 134, which is number 3 in line, I suspect it'll be probably 15, 20 minutes before we do that. And having said all that, is there anything to come before the committee before we begin? Seeing none, about 2 weeks ago we had Senate Bill 102 that has to do with the August 22nd cutoff of legal aliens and how Medicaid applies to them. So we've discussed it. Senate Finance would like to have it. It's part of the overall welfare reform and the budget itself. So I don't think we need any further discussion. And Mr. Livey is here if we do need to ask him questions. But I think we'll do just fine if we just pass it out of committee, and I'd entertain a motion to do so.
Chairman, I move to report Senate Bill 102 from the Hess Committee with individual recommendations, and we'll send along the accompanying fiscal notes.
Is there any discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, Senate Bill 102 passed out of committee. House Bill 147, and we thank you, Mr. Livey. Thanks for coming. House Bill 147, having to do with state boarding school, sponsored by Representative Bundy. Morning, Representative.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Would you give us your sponsor statement, please?
I certainly will, and tempted to say we need to keep meeting like this. I am Representative Bundy, Representative District 18. Thank you for scheduling House Bill 147. House Bill 147 is an act relating to the expense of housing non-resident charter school students and authorizing charter school programs that would provide dormitories and other service to non-residents, as well as the school board, or I mean State Board of Education and their duties as to the establishment of state boarding schools. Mount Edgecombe is the state's only authorized boarding school, and it's obviously earned an excellent reputation for excellence in education. Many of our leaders have graduated from Mount Edgecombe. I found it surprising, however, that we only allowed this one boarding school when they were doing such a fine job, and by state law did not allow any other schools that might wish to emulate Mount Edgecombe that opportunity. This bill proposes to increase opportunities for state boarding schools as a way to help increase the quality of education, particularly in rural Alaska. It would allow the state to open additional boarding schools. I do have to add the caveat, though, that these would be schools where the boarding function was not funded by the state. This is the good news and the bad news. I've heard from two communities, one in Tocotin and one in Galena, and I've heard stories that there are other rural centers that would be interested in establishing a boarding school program. As the committee is undoubtedly aware, there are a number of very small schools in rural Alaska. As the foundation formulas go forward, they will be encouraged to consolidate, and I think one of the options that should be allowed is communities look into the possibility of them establishing a boarding school. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I would be available to questions.
Thank you, Representative Bundy. Questions of the bill sponsor? I also was visited by the superintendent of schools from Galena. That was a very interesting presentation that he gave. That's quite a facility for whatever we use it for. That's an asset that somehow the state needs to use, whether it's for our children or someone else. But that, I didn't realize that all that was there.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if the rest of the committee members are aware, the entire Air Force facility that is in Galena is being kept in warm storage, and that whole capital investment would be available to be used for a school program. They have the buildings. The Air Force is paying the water and sewer, I believe. They have a contractor there who has some 40 employees that they are feeding, and they would then provide the food service for the students. It's really almost a turnkey facility. Galena, of course, would like some additional state monies to get started. I think there are other sources of money, and I know they would look into providing vocational high school kinds of experiences, particularly for say the mine is beginning to show promise in that area. I would point out that places like Red Dog are providing strong educational support for the local schools to train their workers. So I think there are other areas where money can be obtained, and that is such an opportunity that 3/4 of the project is finished.
Yeah, and when you take care of all those fixed costs that you normally struggle with to get the project going, there in place, it's pretty exciting. Anyway, any other questions of Representative Bundy? Sir, if you just slide around the side there, Mr. Sear would like to testify. And John, if you would, please.
Thank you, Senator. For the record, my name is John Sear. I'm the president of NEA Alaska. We have just a couple problems with the bill as it's written. The first Representative Bundy touched on, and that's the question of finances. If school districts elect to build boarding school programs in rural Alaska, that's an expensive proposition. And someone, somewhere, has got to pay for the boarding of those students. I think if we look at what it costs Mount Edgecombe, and I don't have the figures at hand, to keep children at the school and board feed them, you know, round the clock, 24-hour service, it's too expensive for a school district to do unless they pull the money out of regular programs somewhere. And we're not quite sure exactly how this whole thing will work. I mean, it's kind of like, to use a phrase, it's an unfunded non-mandate. I mean, I don't know how. We don't know how you put this kind of program together without the proper kind of funding. The other problem is the problem, if you will, of a statewide program being administered by a local school district. Currently, statewide programs like Mount Edgecombe are administered by the state. They come under the purveyance of the Department of Education at some point and the state school board. And we believe that is proper because it's a program that's offered to all the children of the state, not just to a local district. This bill, as it's written, has no provision for that. And so we would believe that somehow we need some type of state oversight into these programs. And with that, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sear. Questions of Mr. Sear?
Mr. Chairman, I may be able to offer a partial solution to the state oversight question. If a boarding school were to be a charter school, that, of course, has to be approved by the local school district and then by the state school board. So in the event that it were a charter school, it would have at least a state level of approval. As far as a local school district being under then scrutiny at the state school board, I guess we could have some interesting discussions about local autonomy, and I would prefer that it remain a local decision.
Thank you. We have on the teleconference line from Kenai, Ms. Barb Kangas. Ms. Kangas, are you there, please?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
If you would provide your testimony.
Well, my problem, or my concern is why Section 1, I know this has been spoken of a number of times here before today, but specifically where it says may not be paid for with state money, but may be paid for with funds contributed by sources other than the state. I have a problem with that, especially since our local school budget was cut $2.2 million. We do have a number of charter schools online for next year. I don't see how we can mandate funding for new programs when we can't even fund the programs that we have in effect at this time. Pretty much that big short squeeze. I just have a problem with having each district, I imagine, is where the funding would come from. There again, I'm just assuming. However, that's where the funding had come from to start up, or some of the money had come from to start up the charter school. So they're again assuming that the money's going to have to come from the district. And in lieu of the cuts that have been made currently, I don't see how we can fund new programs until we've funded all the programs that are on the board right now. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Kangas. Representative Bundy, would you like to respond?
I'm not sure I understand, but I don't believe this is a bill mandates anything. It's a permissive bill that says that if a district wants to either set one up themselves or allow a charter school that would then also be a boarding school, they may, but they certainly don't have to. And so I don't see that this is an unfunded mandate.
Thank you, Ms. Kangas, for coming out this morning. I think that's all the testimony we have on House Bill 147. Be the wish of the chair that we pass this out of committee. Representative Senator Ward.
Yes, just so that people understand the unfunded mandate part of this, there isn't one. And I appreciate you bringing this bill forward. Galena's got 180 days evacuation procedure with it. I was hoping that they would go into a vocational training program out there for a lot of the young rural native people, but the funding sources that are currently available for it and other places are not only the regional corporations, but also through the Bureau of Indian Affairs for native students, which would offset a tremendous amount of the cost of the Indian Action Program, which was done at Wildwood when we as a state help transfer that over to one of the local entities to start the vocational training there. This is an excellent concept, and if in fact the school districts in Montana have been reduced from 700 to 400 in the last decade, these kind of tools need to be made available for the people in local communities so that quality education, they have lots of tools available. And so I hope that this does follow the intent and becomes a good tool for the local districts. With that, I'd like to make a motion to move House Bill 147 out of committee with individual recommendations and the company physical notes.
Thank you. Is there objection? Seeing none, House Bill 147 is passed out of committee. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Chairman, committee members.
Let's go now to Senate Bill 134, and I would like to welcome five folks in Kenai. I know you're there, and we'll get to you here just shortly to testify on 134. I think we have three people in the room. Let's see. I'm getting standby here. We got all sorts of people. Okay. Ms. Trimble, we'll get to you here in just a moment. What I'm doing is lining up the folks that would like to testify in the order of the time that you rang in. So, all right. To summarize, we have 11 We have at least 11 and perhaps 14 people to testify in Senate Bill 134. So having said that, we'll take testimony over the LIO network first, the teleconference network first. And before we do that, we will have the sponsor statement. And that is Senator Lehman, so we'll ask him to do that. Then we'll go to the teleconference network and then come back. I know we have one person here. Huh? Let's see. We have one person from DOE and two folks here in the hearing room. We'll, if it's all right with you folks, we'll put you at the end of the line. So let's begin with the sponsor statement and call on Senator Lehman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chairman and committee members, this bill was brought to my attention by folks involved in homeschooling in Alaska, and it's a an exemption in the section regarding compulsory attendance. And to present the sponsor statement, one of my legislative aides has been working on this so much. I would like to have this be okay with you, Rachel Moreland.
Absolutely. If your office is like the rest of our offices, Rachel knows more about this than you do anyhow.
Good morning.
Good morning, Rachel.
No comment. Please comment.
Can you compare with the chairman's remarks?
For the record, my name is Rachel Moreland, and I am an aide to Senator Lauren Lehman. Mr. Chairman, there is a blank committee substitute if the committee would like to adopt it for discussion purposes.
I would so move, Mr. Chairman.
Objection to adopting a committee substitute for Senate Bill 134. Seeing none, please proceed.
Okay, Senate Bill 134 adds a paragraph to the compulsory attendance policy, Alaska Statute 1430.010, paragraph B, providing an exemption for children schooled at home by a parent or guardian. The original bill required students be instructed in reading, spelling, mathematics, science, history, civics, literature, writing, and English grammar. The new committee substitute that is on the table deletes that language. Currently, there are no specific provisions in the Alaska statutes pertaining to homeschooled students. There are several ways current homeschoolers comply with the law. Homeschoolers in technical compliance are now required to follow provisions for private and exempt schools, Alaska Statute 1445-100-130, or they may participate in a government-sponsored course, Alaska Statute 1445-010-B-11, and there's some other provisions there I can reference later. Neither provision was designed with homeschoolers in mind. Senate Bill 134 codifies current practice by many homeschoolers. Families in which children are homeschooled are numerous throughout the state, and their numbers are growing quickly. It's time we acknowledge them by law. Senate Bill 134 recognizes the important contribution homeschooling parents and students make to our state.
Thank you, Ms. Moreland. Questions of Senator Lehman?
Rachel, do you have any numbers on how many students in Alaska are being homeschooled?
Or is that Senator Lehman, through the chair, there is no one roster of a total of homeschooled students. There are different homeschooling organizations throughout the state with estimates. Jack Phelps from the vice president for the Alaska Private and Homeschool Association could probably give you a better idea as to the number of homeschooled students in the state.
Do you have any evidence about performance of homeschooled students as compared to those educated in the more, I don't know if I want to say more traditional methods, because that's probably homeschooling is the most traditional method, but compared to those that are attending organized schools, either private or public.
Senator Lehman, through the chair, there is information provided in your packet from the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, which is a national survey, but also is reflected in Alaska. You'll remember that there was recently, I think it's a reading competition, and a lot of correspondence students won those competitions. Senator Green, did you sponsor that? Is that
when
you
signed citation.
On to it? Citation.
Yes, the citation. Yeah.
The results
did very well, I might add.
The the results here in Alaska have been very reflective of the nation as very effective. Testing scores are way over the national average. So.
And one final question, Mr. Chairman. Were you homeschooled?
Yes, I was. I was homeschooled, private schooled, and public schooled. So I've been through it all. And co-op schooled.
Just ask a follow-up on that. Did you feel that your homeschooling experience prepared you adequately for your other experiences?
My homeschool experience was probably the highlight of my education besides my college experience. And I have to admit that I learned the most, the compacted into the years that I homeschooled. It allowed me to proceed through college at a quicker pace. I graduated from high school a little bit early, so it was a great experience.
Thanks. Thank you, Senator Lehman. Other questions of Ms. Marley? Seeing none, you're welcome to slide around the side of the table and stay at the table with us as we go to the teleconference network. And I'd like to go first to Ms. Mary Trimble in Eagle River. Good morning, Mary. Are you there, please?
Yes, I am.
If you would please provide your testimony and limit it to 5 minutes, please.
Yes, I will. I thank you for this opportunity. I'm the president of IRSHA, which represents 345 students at the Eagle River Chibiac Homeschool Association. And I answer the phone for AFEA, which is Alaska Private and Home Educators Association. I taught in elementary and secondary public schools for 6 years and have homeschooled for 8 years. I'm currently teaching two boys, one in sixth grade and the other in ninth grade. I appreciated the homeschool resolution that passed last year, and I see Senate Bill 134, especially with the amendment, as the next step. And I thank you very much for passing last year's resolution, and am really looking forward to seeing this next step, as there are a growing number of homeschoolers, especially in Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Trimble. Questions of Ms. Trimble? Seeing none, I'd like to go to Wasilla and speak with Ms. Julie Chaffee, and then that'll be followed by Ms. Maggie Seiple in Anchorage. Ms. Chaffee, morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Hear you just fine. If you'd provide your testimony, please, and limit it to 5 minutes.
Okay. My name is Julie Chase, and I represent Valley Home Educators. And basically, our view from our group out here is we reflect the same thing as Mr. Trimble just expressed. We definitely appreciate Senate Bill 134, and particularly the substitute that's requested there. And we thank you for that opportunity, and thank you for all the work you've done on this for us.
Questions of Ms. Chaffee? Seeing none, thank you for coming out this morning. I'd like to go to Anchorage, Ms. Maggie Seiple, and that'll be followed by Mr. Jack Phelps in Ketchikan. Ms., is it Seiple or Seiple?
Jack's in the audience.
Oh. Ms. Seiple, are you in Anchorage?
Okay. There's no one here by that name.
All right, we'll double check that and come back. Is anyone in Anchorage to testify on Senate Bill 134?
No one else for 134 here.
Okay, thank you. Let's go to Matsu Valley and speak with Ms. Julie Chase. Ms. Chase, are you there, please?
Just did her.
Okay, I'm working off of two. Oh, yes. Okay, and her name was Chase or
Chase? Chase.
Chase. Okay, all right. We're over there. All right. Let's go to Anchorage and speak with Ms. Sathita Pittman. And that's on Senate Bill 102. Let's come down. We've done this one.
Since we've already passed it out. Thank you.
All right, we've got that. Thank you. Now we're going to go to Fairbanks and Senate Bill 134 and speak with Ms. Jamie Cox. Good morning, Ms. Cox.
Morning. I'm just here to speak in support of Senate Bill 134 and thank Senator Lehman for sponsoring it and recognizing those of us who are homeschoolers. I'm homeschooling three children this year, fourth, second, and kindergarten. And I certainly would encourage you to pass this and remind you that your introduction pretty much said it all. I think you'll find that homeschooling parents are very committed and dedicated and involved in their children's lives, and I think homeschooled children probably, if there was a way to measure it, would we would find that they probably score well above, well, we know they score well above average, but probably it would be my, I would suspect, score above those in public school. And also, our, my experience with homeschooled kids are they tend to be very polite and respectful and generally pretty pleasurable people to be around. So, thank you, and please pass this.
Thank you, Ms. Cox. Questions? Seeing none, I'd like to stay in Fairbanks and speak with Ms. Ruth Ewig. Ms. Ewig, are you there, please?
Yes, I am.
If you would provide your testimony and limit it to 5 minutes, please.
I would like to thank the legislators down there who are working hard. We do appreciate it, even though we're so far removed up here geographically. And I'd especially like to thank Senator Lehman for sponsoring this. And I noticed there's Miller and Phillips on it also. I support SB 134 because the state needs to recognize a successful educational alternative, homeschooling our children. As homeschoolers, we believe in our God-given mandate to train up our children into good, responsible, critically thinking adults. We favor a traditional approach in the best sense of the word, stressing academic subjects as listed in the bill. The 180-day requirement for public schools does not fit our routine, which can be variable from getting up to going to bed, at intervals throughout the day, alternating with chores. Some days are shorter, other days are spent away, but still schooling with projects. We gauge when we are finished, not by the number of days, but rather by when the subject matter has been completed. This may be beyond 180 days, it may easily be beyond. We are getting successful results locally and nationwide, while public education continues to plummet. Anyone wanting an honest assessment of education will acknowledge this and do the homework required to verify it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Ewig. Questions? Seeing none, let's go to Ms. Sharon Smith, still in Fairbanks. Morning, Ms. Smith.
Hi, good morning, Senator. First of all, I'd like to thank you all for all the hard work and efforts and care and concern that you have for our future generation, our future leaders. And our most promising, precious little ones that are growing up this generation. I'd like to thank Senator Lehman, Miller, and Phillips for this bill. There are many, many reasons why we do choose to homeschool as the Smith family does. We have two children, most ages 12 and age 10, and homeschool them all their lives. And we just are fortunate and blessed that this is our responsibility and commitment to do so, to turn them into future leaders and fine citizens, of which Alaskans will be proud of. And we just appreciate this and all the effort and help and that you all have done to introduce 137. As a homeschooling parent, mother, we're concerned about our education. That's one of the greatest things and opportunities and adventures that we give our children. And to me, every day is an education and adventure. Homeschooling is a day-to-day process and a day-to-day learning activity. And it's also an adventure and a growth bonding with your children. And again, we thank you fine people down there for doing a fantastic job. And thank you for this opportunity to have this teleconference. And have a great summer.
Thank you. Ms. Smith, thanks for coming out this morning. Like to any questions of Ms. Smith? Seeing none, let's stay in Fairbanks and Ms. Lisa Seitz. And Ms. Seitz, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for letting us be here. I appreciate the opportunity coming to speak. And I'd just like to share with you a little bit about when we began homeschooling, we just believed that we could offer our children the best education available. Now, 6 years later, we have 3 children, and we're even more convinced of this. I lead the Interior Homeschool Association, which is a volunteer support group of families here, and have also in the past led the North Pole support group. And we don't really have numbers here that are definite because, as you know, not everyone is registered through the state. But last year, we came up with a figure around the Fairbanks North Star Borough of approximately 1,900 students in homeschooling across the borough, and that doesn't even count the ones that might not be listed through Juneau. It's a real viable alternative And it's estimated through Homeschool Legal Defense there are about 1.2 million homeschoolers across the nation right now, even though the Department of Education shows only about 600,000. We see the numbers increasing every day, and we see through the standardized tests that the homeschoolers are scoring well above average in many cases, and that's the case in our own home. I think it's timely that we're here today to talk about moving towards making this a separate entity, the separate entity that it is, because in our house, school doesn't just happen 180 days a year, and I think that's true in most homeschools. So we've taken on the direct responsibility to oversee the children every day, and you know, therefore we're not sending them off to an outside institution, and we don't need to follow the same regulations that we would want them to fall under. We've got that responsibility right there in hand. In our homeschool, it doesn't take me the same amount of time to tutor my son one-on-one to teach him reading as it would a teacher trying to teach 25 or 30 children to read in the morning. So just as it's not the same number of hours in a day or the month or the year, I think we need to recognize that and free up homeschoolers to give that individual and unique educational opportunity to each child. And I think this Senate Bill 134 is a step in that direction. And I really encourage you to support it. I thank you so much for bringing it forward and for allowing us to speak today. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Questions?
I have a quick question, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Lehman?
Which one's that from? Lisa, in your testimony, you said 1,900. I just want to make sure I understand. Was that in the Fairbanks area? You estimate 1,900, or is that a statewide number?
That number came from a fellow that was doing a documentary, and it really only encompassed the North Star Borough. It really surprised a lot of people that it would be that high. What that encompassed, I'll explain that to you. It was the figures through Juno of those that are listed as their own private and religious schools, and it was also added to the correspondence figures here in the district, and then the Alyeska Central School, which of course is the state correspondence. He combined those figures and came out with that over 1,900 just in the Fairbanks North Star Borough. And that was only up through January of last year. And at that time, of course, the person in Juneau mentioned that the numbers that were given for those listed as private religious schools had increased since then, but of course there wasn't a final number. I hope to do some research and get a current number on that soon so that we'll have a better picture, but I know that we see new people every month at the meetings. There are a lot of them out there.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Seitz, for coming out this morning. I'd like to go now to Petersburg and speak with Ms. Sherry Lee Zachary. Ms. Zachary, morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much. My husband and I have both written up a one-page testimony, which we will send in to you. So I'm not going to read them exactly. My husband does address the financial concerns of many people who are opposed to homeschooling, children taking part in public schools, and I have addressed a number of issues in my letter. I'd like to just let you know that Petersburg is about 3,500 people. We have about 45 homeschooled children that we know of in this area, and I suspect that there are homeschoolers up and down on the islands that we are unaware of, but the ones that we know of in this area are about 45 children. My husband and I homeschool our children. One reason is because there are certain things that we want our girls schooled in that used to be taught in the public school system that is no longer taught, that are either no longer taught or in some cases no longer even allowed to be alluded to in the current public school curriculum. Another reason is that the teachers do have their hands full right now, and at this point in our lives, we are able to give our children homeschooling, which does help alleviate the burden of the public school teacher. Another reason is that because in a world where families are breaking apart, children are learning to be callous. and they're learning to be on the attack in order to protect themselves. They are bringing a lot of these attitudes to school, and when children are constantly trying to defend themselves from the attacks of others, they cannot learn the positive character qualities that help them to reach out in compassion to others around them who are hurting. And we want to raise our children so that they are a part of the healing of our nation and not a part of the problem. We are a low-income family. We spend in order to homeschool our children, and yes, we do pay our tax dollars. We haven't complained that our tax dollars go to the public school system, which actually doesn't allow us to take part in some of their things. The part that I want to just address right now is some personal experience that I've had with the public school system. For years, we've been told we can't do this and we can't do that. And most recently, we have been told that we cannot check out any of the public school system books, and we can't even go into the public school library and sit there and read their materials. It's my understanding that our tax dollars have helped to purchase these things for the public school system, and yet we are not able to even sit in the library, and we are told that this is policy. Well, a couple weeks ago, I contacted the school district to find out just what are the policies regarding the homeschoolers, and I was told officially that there are no policies, written down policies regarding homeschoolers. Yet, we are told that policy says we can't do this and policy says we can't do that. Interesting enough, a couple years, last year, there were two homeschool boys which were really adept at wrestling. And they were allowed to join the wrestling team, and I am very happy for them that they were allowed to join the wrestling team. Yet, we are told that we aren't allowed to take be part of extracurricular activities. And this is very confusing to us to know what we can do and what we can't do. There are some things that it would be easier, or that we don't have access to, like chemistry labs and language labs and stuff that public schools do have, that even if we were charged a fee of some kind to be allowed to use them or for our children to take those classes, I just get real confused, and because we're told one thing and not allowed to do another, and I think that this bill will help to clear up a lot of that. And so I am really appreciative, my husband's really appreciative of your hard work in trying to set this bill through so that some of these things can be cleared up. Thank you very much for listening to me, and we will send in our testimony.
Thank you, Ms. Zachary. Senator Lehman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Shirley, thanks for relating your experiences, and I'm a little bit troubled by that. I know that we've had some experiences similar to that in the Anchorage School District. We're working on them, and there is legislation in the House that it was introduced by Representative Fred Dyson to deal with that issue. And what we have found is that most school districts in the state do cooperate with home and private schooling parents, and there is a mechanism set up whereby, you know, when students participate in the public school system, that the state foundation formula will compensate. And so if you can share your experience with Representative Dyson and get that into him also, we'll pass this on to him. You know, these are the types of things we want to work on and make sure that indeed students and all students in the state have access to the use of library materials and special courses, and we want it to be a win-win situation for the public schools and those students who are not in the public schools?
I just want to say that, thank you very much for saying that. Also, we're not here to fight the public school. We're here to aid in the best education for all children all around. We want to be a part of that. We you know, don't want to be a thorn in the side of anybody.
Thank you, Ms. Zachary, for testifying this morning. I'd like to go to Kenai now, and we have six folks here in Kenai, and let's start with Ms. Barbara Jha. Ms. Jha, good morning.
My name is Barbara Jha.
Jha, thank you.
And I've homeschooled my son for 10 and a half years, and I tutor the daughter of a neighbor, and I'm also a certified teacher with the state. There's a large number of homeschoolers in our area, and we are in favor of the exemption for homeschoolers as stipulated in Senate Bill 134. Thank you for your support. My son entered the local high school as a junior in January, and he has adjusted with no problem. Academically, I felt that at this time, his foundation was such that attendance in the school would be providing new experiences that he decided that he would like, and it wouldn't cause him to regress grade-wise. And one type of homeschooling that I've really enjoyed through the years with not just my son, but the other students that I meet, is their ability to relate not only to peers, but with younger children and adults as well. And for several years for a private school in the area, I've been a homeschool supervisor, so I get to meet with a lot of the kids and talk to their parents and discuss new ideas. And I've been really impressed with the homeschooling parents that I've met, their dedication, and I really am happy about this bill and your support for it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Jha. Questions? Seeing none, let's move to Ms. Debbie Palm. Morning, Ms. Palm.
Good morning. I'm also a homeschool parent in Kiski, and I'm also a certified teacher and taught in the public schools for a period of time. Now I'm homeschooling, and I also work with the correspondence program. And I am in support of this bill, 134. I think that it's a viable option for many of us. And thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Palm. Questions? Seeing none, let's go to Mr. and Mrs. Dean and Mary Nichols. Mr. and Mrs. Nichols, would you like to one at a time or together? Okay, and I assume this is Mary.
Yes.
Good morning, Mary.
I'm a homeschooling mother, and I'm in favor of Senate Bill 134 and the secondary amendment to strike the language dealing with an organized educational program. Although our homeschooling program does include all the items listed, I can see where the language could allow for a bureaucrat to come in and verify compliance with these requirements, and even further interference could result as some entity could then decide what particular history should be taught, etc. I feel the parents are capable of determining the curriculum of their children without any regulations placed upon them. The homeschooling families that I know are very committed to their task. Homeschooling takes a lot of time, but the results are well worth it. We homeschooled for 13 years, and we have one child who did take the GED last year and tested in the 85 to 97 percentile in the 5 areas of testing. We have another child who will take the GED this spring, and I expect her to do as well. They are both going on to further education. Our three teenagers are models for their peers, and we are very proud of their contributions to our community. I believe you will find this true in most homeschoolers. I believe with very few exceptions, you can trust homeschooling parents to do what is right for their children, and I encourage you to pass this bill with the lines 5 and 6 deleted. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nichols. Mr. Nichols?
Yes, sir. I just want to thank you, men, for doing this, and ladies, it's very progressive on your part to consider this. I also represent, as pastor of First Baptist Church of Kenai, several homeschooling families, and I just want to address the subject of their adjustment, and I know it's always a concern, seems to be, of a lot of people, socialization. I can attest to the fact that these children are some of the most well-adjusted children that I've been around. Their respect and demeanor towards adults is something that is very joyful to behold. And I've just been real pleased with that aspect of it. And most of the children that I'm affiliated with and know of have done extremely well. They read well, and it's because the parents are able to adapt the education to the particular need of the child. And so I just thank you very much for considering this. And I believe if this bill is passed, it'll be one of the final bills for the rest of the United States to follow. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nichols. Questions of Mr. and Mrs. Nichols? Seeing none, let's go to Ms. Joanne Hardesty. Ms. Hardesty, good morning.
Good morning. I really thank you for your efforts on presenting this bill and the amendments to the bill that are favorable to homeschoolers. I've been homeschooling for about 6 years now. Currently, I have a fourth grader, a second grader, and a preschooler. The question of standardized testing, we tested our children twice. On the SAT, my son scored very high in about the 75th to 80th percentile, and in math up in the 90th percentile in one part of the math. And then we just had them tested again in January, and again they showed real good results in their math and language. The first year that we homeschooled, we had oversight by Barb, who we talked earlier. She was a certified teacher and on a monthly basis came to visit us and made sure that we got off to a good start. Homeschooling parents, like Mary pointed out, are concerned parents, concerned about what our children are learning and that they are doing well. And I just want to echo the thoughts of everyone that's been on this line and say that we would like to see anything that's favorable to homeschooling passed. And just thank you very much for your efforts. We're real excited about this. Thank you.
Thank you, Hardesty. Questions? Seeing none, let's go. The last person in Kenai is Mr. Reeser. Morning, Mr. Reeser.
Yeah, just a couple quick comments. First of all, I'd like to thank y'all for bringing this legislation up. I think it's about time. I support Senate Bill 134, with the exception of the deletion of lines 5 and 6. I also believe that that could lend the way for bureaucratic intervention into homeschooling. One of the positive effects of this bill, I believe, would be to elevate homeschooling from a policy which exists as now to legal protection under the law. I think that's it's due for that. It's existed that way for several years now, and there's been no problem with the Department of Education, but I can foresee in the future where that may become an issue. Thousands of homeschoolers and parents will benefit from this law. It'll clarify any questions that exist now between school districts, Department of Education, and parents. There's been several instances of school districts not fully understanding this law, parents not fully understanding, et cetera. And that's been resulted in some problems in the past. And I think this bill would go a long way to alleviate that problem or any problems in the future. Again, I thank you all for bringing this legislation up, and we appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reeser. Senator Ward.
Thank you. I waited till everybody from Kenai had a chance to speak, and I just wanted to let everyone know I completely concur in eliminating it, the part that could put the bureaucrats into the homeschooling process. And I also just want everybody to know that I have received all the letters and telegrams from you, and I concur with not only the position that we are taking on Senate Bill 134, but I also want to applaud you for your effort in the community to make it a much better community, and I thank you for that.
Thank you, Senator Ward. Senator Lehman?
Mr. Chairman, just in to add on to that, I will say that even though I have had numerous differences with this administration, when it comes to this issue, they've been very cooperative, and I just want to applaud them. We have two people from the Department of Education here, and I will note that the fiscal note from the department says that the department does not intend to regulate homeschoolers, and the commissioner herself has been very supportive of this. So I just want to acknowledge that publicly, and for those who are testifying, to praise the administration when praise is due.
Thank you, Senator Lehman, for bringing that out. And the final person to testify, at least on my list, in Anchorage, is Ms. Claudia Walton. Morning, Ms. Walton.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify on this legislation. Can you folks hear me?
We can hear you just fine. Go ahead, please.
Great. First of all, I wanted to thank the sponsors of the bill. We keep seeing these names pop up repeatedly with supporting homeschoolers, and I just want you to know that we appreciate you, and we know who our friends in Juneau are. I came in late, and I don't have a copy of the substitute, the committee substitute for this bill. Can somebody just briefly review what has been changed from the original bill?
Senator Lehman?
Page, the last two lines of the bill are deleted, and so it there's a period right now after the word after the words legal guardian on line four.
Great, thank you. I really don't have any other specific concerns other than the word home. I don't know how that's being actually defined in this context, but there are people who at different times homeschool their children. If they happen to be on a boat or whatever, traveling around, or have their child in their office, I would just hope that home could be defined in a rather broad context, as in the custody of their parents, rather than in a specified location that they would be limited to. Otherwise, the bill to me looks like it's pretty supportive. There are many people that don't really know anything about homeschooling. They just hear about it, what they read in the paper, whatever, until something happens in their home, maybe a difficulty, family crisis, illness, any number of situations can come up. And then all of a sudden they realize that that particular child of theirs might be better for a year or more actually staying at home with their closer supervision. And anything that you folks can do to help secure this opportunity, this learning option for parents and for students, certainly is needed and is most beneficial. Once again, we tend to be short-sighted and think just because I'm not doing it today, it's maybe not important to me, but frankly, all citizens in the state of Alaska should be very concerned that they have this option so that it's available to them whenever they might need it. So I applaud your efforts and appreciate any support you give to homeschooling efforts in our state. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Senator Lehman?
Paige, in response to your what you just raised, I would interpret in the home to mean in whatever circumstance the parent is teaching that child. And I know of several homeschool parents who will take children with them on family vacations or travel, or so they may be teaching them on airplanes or in RVs or on boats or in their office or other places like that. And I guess I would consider the home to be the home unit, and not necessarily just in the house that is their domicile for most of the year.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming out this morning. And my list shows that the teleconference network is completed as far as testimony. We want to thank everyone out there. I'd like to go now to the hearing room and ask Ms. Buell if she would come forward and talk about Senate Bill 134. Morning.
Morning. For the record, my name is Nancy Buell. I'm Director of the Division of Teaching and Learning Support. The Department of Education, as Senator Lehman has indicated, is very supportive of clarifying and helping and supporting parents who are wanting to school their own children. The commissioner, the deputy commissioner, and myself have all had wonderful experiences relating to parents who are homeschooling their children. We are aware of an extensive support network for this, not only in this state, but around the United States. We also have had the unpleasant duty of being in limbo where the distinction between homeschooling and private school children are concerned, and are aware that there are parents in the state who feel as though it's not a legal option for them to do this, that someone's trying to prohibit them from it. So clarifying it in a bill of this sort will be beneficial, I believe, to everyone. In terms of the pieces that were taken out, we were talked to about that, and we appreciate the opportunity for input. Of course, it's the posture of the Department of Education that all children should learn basic skills, and we recognize that education is a key and important value for all the citizens of the state. if there were things put into the bill which were to encourage parents to make sure that their children got basic skills, that may or may not be at all necessary from your perspective, but the department would support that as well. The only other thing I guess that I would like to add to the testimony that has been made so far, I appreciate Senator Lehman making the statement on behalf of the department that we do not intend to regulate this in any way. We do know that there are districts all around the state that provide substantial support to homeschooling parents, and would hope that there would be no intent anywhere that this not continue. We do know that there are districts that have cooperative relationships, that even have homeschool coordinators, that provide resources to parents. In our opinion, this is an appropriate use of the money following the child, and that's an appropriate thing for our districts to do. If I can answer any questions about current regulations or things in the department which are either supportive of this kind of thing or might be considered impediments, I would be glad to do that. We're not really aware of any that would be impediments.
Questions of Ms. Buell? Senator Wirt?
Is there a policy concerning homeschooling as to whether or not the people that are homeschooling that are paying taxes can come in and use a library book if it's not disrupting the other regular schedule of schools?
Well, policies, unless they're specifically relating to all the schools in the state, would be a matter of the local board of education. We're not aware of any policies that would prohibit that. As a matter of fact, as I said, many districts provide the option for children who are homeschooled to take part in band or other specialized classes, physics, things like that. Apparently they take part in advanced placement classes in Fairbanks. There are lots of examples of this. So it would be difficult to believe that there were policies prohibiting it. In terms of practice, we couldn't say what practice was on this particular topic. And certainly if there was a concern brought, the local school board would be the place for parents who are homeschooling to come and raise that concern. They're certainly welcome, as any other citizen is, at their local school board. I'm not aware of any policies that would do that, sir.
Other questions? Ms. Buell, on Senate Bill 134, the DOE submitted a zero fiscal note. We've now had a committee substitute placed in front of us. Would you agree that that fiscal note still applies?
I would.
Okay. Second question, I know very little about homeschooling, so pardon this question if it's really out. How do we measure the progress of kids that are being homeschooled?
At this stage, Mr. Chair, we don't even know where they are, so we aren't measuring any progress. They undoubtedly are measuring their progress if they have previously registered as a private school, which many of them have. They're giving tests and they're keeping records. If they register, it means they achieve an exempt status and can keep their own records. Otherwise, they follow the regulations for private schools. If they begin homeschooling, and if homeschooling is an exemption to the compulsory schooling law, we would have no way of knowing. Which is not, of course, to imply that they wouldn't be doing well. Simply, we would have no way of knowing, any more than we have any good way of knowing right now how many of them there are.
Do kids go through a whole school? Do they go through high school as homeschool?
They can. They can in other states.
They don't have a high school diploma then?
If they were homeschooled, that would be correct.
When they're 30 years old, they ask for a high school diploma, they don't have one?
Jack Phillips can answer that.
They have a high school diploma.
They do.
Oh, that's Jack Phillips.
They have a diploma.
Yes, they do.
Any other questions of Ms. Buell? Thank you for coming this morning. Mr. Gordy is here from Juneau. You'd join us, please. Morning.
Morning. For the record, my name is Tom Gordy, and I represent the Christian Coalition of Juneau. And you wonder what in the world we're talking about in Christian Coalition of Juneau on this subject. I'm an associate pastor to a church here locally, and we have quite a few people in our church who homeschool, and I have talked with them over the last few days about homeschooling, and a lot of them have kind of sent their word along with me that because they're home schooling their kids right now, and so I'm representing them. I asked them what are some of the advantages of homeschooling that they have seen and why they homeschool their children. One of them is because they feel that their children learn more quicker because there's a 1-to-1 student-teacher ratio. The children can learn more in a shorter span of time instead of having to wait on an entire class to learn a subject before they move on to the next subject. Another advantage is that the children can learn at their own rate and not at the rate of a class. We have a young man in our church. He's 6 years old, and if he is a grade ahead of his counterparts in the public school system. He's very smart, and he just goes right through his material, and he learns it quickly. He moves on to the next subject, and he's doing very well. He's a very smart kid. On the other side of that, though, if a child is having problems in a subject, the class may leave a child behind. And whereas in homeschooling, a child can keep being taught until the child learns the subject. Another advantage is that parents can monitor what is being taught. And I think this is probably one of the biggest reasons why people homeschool. Things are being taught today in schools that parents disagree with for whatever reasons, be they spiritual, social, or whatever. With homeschooling, parents can protect their kids from things that they feel like they do not want their kids to learn. Not only that, but parents can choose the curriculum that the kids are taught in homeschooling, whereas in public school, the kids are offered one set of curriculum, and the parents have to accept that. Whereas in homeschooling, there's many different types of curriculum out there. Some are Bible-based, some are not, some are with correspondence, and this gives the parents the freedom to choose the curriculum for their children. Another advantage is constant monitoring of progress. Instead of getting reports every 3, 6, or 9 weeks to find out if their child is passing or failing or is doing well or not, parents know what's going on with their children. And if the child is failing, then that is the responsibility of the parent and not of a teacher at a school. And it's a team effort in which the parents are involved. And I believe the parents can keep a constant monitoring of the child's progress. And another thing was the negative peer pressure that kids sometimes receive from schoolmates. A parent told me last night that they took their child out of the public school system just recently, and the child was misbehaving at home, was not obeying the rules, was not doing his chores, was just a lot of discipline problems, and this is a fourth grader. And the parents took him out of the school and started homeschooling him, and immediately the discipline problems disappeared. And so the parents are all for homeschooling for that reason. Now, to say that there's a perfect form of education, I don't know if that's true or not. Every form of education probably has disadvantages. And but the point of all this is that homeschooling should be held in the same regard as public education or private education. It is a great institution. This is a day and age where we are encouraging people to have individual responsibility and quit depending upon government for all of its to provide all of its needs. And there are parents out there who are taking this on, and they are quitting jobs. They are concerned about the welfare of their family and their child's education, and so they are taking this individual responsibility upon themselves. And doing great jobs. And I urge you to send this measure forward with your full recommendations. So.
Thank you, Mr. Gordy. Questions? Seeing none, thanks for being here. Mr. Phelps? Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's nice to be here on a different subject than that which I'm usually in front of you. For the record, my name is Jack Phelps. Today I'm testifying on behalf of the Alaska Private and Home Educators Association, or AFHEA, which is a nonprofit educational corporation serving homeschool community throughout Alaska. AFHEA was founded in 1987 and currently has a membership of about 450 homeschooling families in all parts of the state. It's governed by an elected board of directors, of which I am currently vice president. Also, it is affiliated with the National Center for Home Education, and I've served on the advisory board of that organization since its inception. Robert Nesbitt, in his famous book, Megatrends, mentioned homeschool as part of society's trend towards decentralization and as a sign of increased personal responsibility. It is that and more. It's been called the fastest growing educational phenomenon in modern America. Estimates run as high as 2.5 million American school-aged children being educated by their parents, representing the full range of educational philosophies and crossing all social and economic strata. Patricia Lyons, a researcher for the United States Department of Education, estimated the number at well over a million several years ago, and it has continued to grow in the years since then. Home-taught children are widely recognized as well-educated and socially adjusted young people. They are now sought and recruited by many of the nation's best colleges and universities. Several books have been published in recent years acknowledging their successes and their unique contribution to American society. Several states, notably among them Michigan and Arizona, have recently acted to protect homeschools and codify their role in the range of educational options. In fact, the bill that you have before you today is patterned after the law passed in Michigan last year. Last year, the Alaska legislature passed Senate Concurrent Resolution 24, now Legislative Resolve 53, without a single dissenting vote. That put this body clearly on record asserting the importance of homeschooling to Alaska families and the value of homeschooling to Alaska society. SB 134 codifies that stand and will encourage the responsible activities of the Alaskan homeschool community. The AFIA Board of Directors supports SB 134 because we believe it will establish Alaska in the forefront of those progressive states which strongly support this option for parents who choose to take the direct and personal hand in their children's education. Alaska parents who are teaching their children at home are contributing to Alaska society by preparing the children for the full range of workforce opportunities, and they are doing it at no cost to the state because they bear the full expense for themselves. In my written testimony, I've made some comments about why this is necessary relative to existing law. For sake of brevity, I'll let you read those on your own. To summarize, SB 134 is simply good public policy. It is good for children. It's good for the state of Alaska. It makes a very clear statement that Alaska recognizes the value of personal liberty, personal responsibility, and academic freedom. Each of your constituencies will be well served by the immediate passage of this legislation. I urge you to move it from committee as soon as possible. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify today. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Phelps. Questions?
Mr. Chairman, you might want to renew your question to Jack. And
So if I'm a homeschooled 30-year-old, and what do I say to my employer when they ask me for my high school diploma?
Well, as kind of an aside, Senator, I've been in the workforce for 35 years, and I've never been asked for my high school diploma. But to answer you more, I say that as kind of humorous. But
do you have one?
Yeah, I do. I also have a college degree. But look, maybe I could just draw from my own experience. We home-taught four children all the way through high school. And we just simply, we called our homeschool by a name, and we issued a diploma. Homeschool Legal Defense Association, of which many homeschoolers are members, including myself, offers a very nice diploma that the parents can simply fill out and supply. As far as an impediment to further progress in either an educational career or going into the workforce, we've not seen that as an impediment. Three of my four children have attended college. One of them, in fact, went to a fairly prestigious college in Michigan, which you may be aware of, Hillsdale College. The aide who spoke to you earlier is a graduate of Hillsdale, and he went there on a scholarship. My son-in-law, homeschooled all his life, married to my daughter, who was homeschooled all her life, went to Hillsdale on a full-ride academic scholarship and graduated very near the top of his class in a double major of mathematics and physics. Homeschoolers don't have trouble getting into college. When I first contacted Hillsdale about it, I asked him, I said, you know, he's not going to have an official diploma from anybody but us. And they said, that's not a problem. We need him to take the college entrance exam, and we'd like for you to supply a list of subjects that he studied and maybe a list of textbooks. And we did, and that was fine. And other homeschoolers have had similar experiences.
Thank you. That's interesting. Other questions of Mr. Phelps? Seeing none, thank you, Jack, for being here this morning. Let's see, I think that is all the testimony for Senate Bill 134 that I have. Anything else to come from Senate Bill 134? I'd be open the chair, we'd move this out of committee. Senator Mann?
Mr. Chairman, just before I move that we report, I'll just say that my experiences, my experiences have been somewhat limited. We have not homeschooled our children outside of, informal homeschooling, which probably all of us do, but I was asked several years ago to participate in, I think they call it a commencement exercise of this AFIA group, the Alaska Private Homes Educator Association, and I didn't know exactly what to expect, but there was a demonstration by children all the way from kindergarten through probably 12th grade of subjects that they had studied and learned, and I was very impressed with not only their behavior but their knowledge and what they'd memorized. It was some of the most outstanding effort that I've ever seen, and if others in homeschooling are doing anything like this, it's really a solid base for Alaska, and we're finding, I believe, we're preparing some good students for the generations going to lead Alaska.
Thank you, Senator.
So, having said that, if now's a good time, I move that we report CS for Senate Bill 134, Hess, from committee with individual recommendations and the accompanying zero fiscal note.
Thank you, Senator. And any objection? And I would recognize that that's done due to the outstanding sponsor presentation. Seeing none, the committee substitute for Senate Bill 134 passes on to its next committee of referral. The committee will stand at ease. Come back to order, and we now have before us Senate Bill 17 having to do with the criminal transmission of HIV, sponsored by Senator Taylor. And before us is Mr. Ambrose from Senator Taylor's office. Good morning, and if you would present the sponsor statement, please, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joe Ambrose. I work for Senator Taylor, prime sponsor of Senate Bill 17. Senate Bill 17 was introduced with the goal of putting Alaska in a proactive position when it comes to dealing with individuals who knowingly place others at risk of HIV infection. SB 17 is intended to be preventative as well as punitive. It's intended to render a criminal rather than a moral judgment. As of December 31, 1996, 369 Alaskans have been confirmed to have AIDS. That since tracking began in 1982. Of these cases, 194 have died. The epidemiology section of the Division of Public Health reports that as of December 31, 1996, 640 Alaskans have tested positive for HIV infection. That number represents only those who have voluntarily tested through the state section libraries or laboratories. The statistics show that HIV/AIDS affects both male and female across all age groups and without respect to race or residence. The sad fact is that the rate of infection in Alaska is increasing. If someone intentionally sets out to kill another person by infecting them with the AIDS virus, they can be charged under state law with attempted first-degree murder. But what do we do with the person who does not intend to kill, but who still places others in jeopardy? In 1990, the Attorney General's office reviewed that question and suggested, quote, that it might be possible to prosecute the person for reckless endangerment, end quote. That is a Class A misdemeanor prohibiting reckless conduct which creates a substantial risk of physical injury. Most people would equate becoming infected with HIV as something more than a serious injury. 27 other states have seen fit to adopt specific laws dealing with criminal penalties for knowingly transmitting or exposing another to HIV infection. It would only be prudent for Alaska to have such a statute on the books. SB 17 is brief and to the point. It creates the crime of criminal transmission of HIV and covers actions and conduct known to transmit the disease. The bill also provides an affirmative defense when the person exposed knows beforehand that the action could result in infection. The bill also provides a provision excluding perinatal transmission of the virus and to assure that an individual is not prosecuted for an involuntary act. SB 17 is not intended to punish those who have contacted HIV. It is intended to protect others who may be unknowingly exposed to the virus by what should be a criminal act of irresponsibility. In drafting Senate Bill 17, Mr. Chairman, we researched similar laws adopted in other states. The sponsor used the Illinois statute, almost verbatim, which was adopted in 1989 as the model for the bill before you. A copy of the Illinois statute has been provided to the committee, along with a summary of the laws passed in other states We've also supplied you with two court rulings on the Illinois law. On April 6, 1994, the Illinois Supreme Court held that the statute did not violate state or federal constitutional protections for free speech. The statute did not violate state and federal protections for free association, and that the statute was not unconstitutionally vague. In its ruling, the Supreme Court of the state of Illinois stated, and I quote, "Vagueness, like beauty, is in the eye of the beholder. We, however, read the statute as being sufficiently clear and explicit so that a person of ordinary intelligence need not guess at its meaning or application. Also, it provides sufficiently definite standards for law enforcement officers and triers of fact so that its application need not depend merely on their private conceptions." The Illinois Appellate Court, in a separate case, also ruled that the Illinois statute is not vague, and that a statute need only be sufficiently certain to give a person of ordinary intelligence fair notice that his contemplated conduct is forbidden by law. We also asked the Illinois Department of Public Health about the impact of the statute on HIV testing. That's something you're going to hear quite a bit about. In March of 1995, after the law had been on the books for 6 years, the department reported that testing for HIV/AIDS had increased and not decreased in Illinois. This year, they do report a decrease in public testing, but they attribute that decrease to the increased availability of testing in the private sector and the new availability of home testing. The vast majority of Alaska cases, as reported by our own state health department, resulted from consensual conduct. I ask you to ask yourself if consent would have been given if the facts were known up front. All this bill does is place the responsibility on someone who is infected to advise another person that they are infected. If the person being exposed agrees to conduct that may result in infection, there's no crime. Everybody knows up front. That's the sponsor statement, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Ambrose. Questions of the sponsor? Seeing none, let's go to the teleconference network. And we have, as I said earlier, six folks. And we'll start with Anchorage in the order of sign up. And we have about 20 minutes left here. So if we could try to be brief, we'd sure appreciate it. We want to hear from you. Let's start with in Anchorage, Ms. Pittman. Morning, Ms. Pittman.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Alaska Civil Liberties Union opposes SB 17 both on constitutional grounds and because it would undermine the efforts of our public health system to combat the spread of HIV through voluntary counseling and testing, partner notification, and prevention case management. HIV transmission is really a public health problem, not a criminal problem. Any individual with a transmittable disease, be it HIV, tuberculosis, or hepatitis, should understand how to avoid infecting others and use the appropriate precautions. In those rare instances where an individual intentionally or recklessly transmits HIV, Alaska law already provides the opportunity for prosecution. So adding this language will not add to the prosecutor's tools, but it will likely decrease voluntary testing as well as the education and case management, which typically accompanies being tested and learning the results. Several phrases in the bill raise due process concerns about whether the state is providing adequate notice to prohibited behavior. Among these are page 2, lines 11 through 13, the definition of intimate contact, and in a manner that could result in the transmission of HIV. The affirmative defense provision, page 2, lines 1 through 5, in addition to shifting the burden of proof to the defendant, suggests a scenario where the defense must seek information about the person alleged to have been exposed that would otherwise be confidential. In an era where we are trying to contain the cost of government, it makes little sense to add a new law when the existing law contains adequate provisions. We urge your opposition to SB 17. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Pittman. I'd like to go to Mr. John Middaugh in Anchorage. Morning, Doctor.
Good morning, Chairman Wilson, members of the Senate Health Committee. I'm Dr. John Middaugh, Chief of the Section of Epidemiology, and I'm testifying today for the Department of Health and Social Services. I also have with me a few members of the state's HIV, AIDS, and STD program to answer any specific questions where their expertise could be of value to you. We are testifying coordination with the Department of Law that existing laws do enable criminal prosecution and punishment of egregious behaviors of intentional transmission of HIV. Most important from a public health standpoint, there are potentially severe impacts from this legislation on prevention programs, and we believe that passage of this law will discourage people from being tested and from participating in efforts to identify potential individuals exposed and participate in partner notification. We have a long experience in public health over many, many decades to show that criminalizing infections is a very bad idea, and that that approach harms effective public health efforts to control disease transmission. Other diseases such as hepatitis B, hepatitis C, herpes virus are far more likely to be transmitted in some of the types of conducts that also are associated with transmission of HIV, for example. We too are concerned by the definitions regarding intimate contact that are contained in the legislation, and those definitions are so broad that they could extend to many common activities that pose no risk of disease transmission of HIV or other pathogens, potentially sports, healthcare, EMT activities, healthcare providers, and others. Finally, the bill is titled Creating the Crime of Criminal Transmission of HIV, yet the bill specifically has provisions to show that transmission is not required for criminalization of a potential exposure. Exposure is only when a person who has a contact with the virus, regardless whether the virus actually infects another person. In most exposures to HIV, no transmission or infection of the exposed person occurs. In conclusion, we're very concerned about HIV. We've been fighting for 15 years HIV in Alaska. Our efforts are aimed at preventing transmission and preventing the disease from spreading. We believe that SB 17 will harm preventive and public health efforts. We request that you not pass Senate Bill 17. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Middaugh. Questions of Dr. Middaugh? Seeing none, I would also mention for those folks on the teleconference network that we do have in the hearing room Ms. Brink from Alaska Public Defenders and also Ms. Carpinetti from the Department of Law. Let's see, still in Anchorage, let's go to Ms. Andrea Nenzel. Ms. Nenzel, good morning.
Yes, I'm here for the Alaska Native Assistance Association. I'm the executive director, and this is an agency that is a private nonprofit organization, provides direct services to persons living with HIV infection, and provides extensive education and behavior change interventions for the prevention of HIV infection throughout the Greater Anchorage Bowl and statewide via an AIDS helpline. Our board and agency are adamantly opposed to Senate Bill 17. It's our strong belief that this bill will greatly deter efforts to prevent a further HIV infection within the state by discouraging testing and by promoting further ignorance and discrimination. Testing and appropriate follow-up counseling and care regarding responsible behavior to prevent transmission is the most effective way to reduce HIV transmission. Presently, ignorance and discrimination are two of the major barriers to testing. This bill will do nothing but increase the stigmatization of persons living with HIV infection. Existing Alaska Criminal Code does provide adequate means to prosecute and punish anyone who either intentionally or recklessly transmits HIV. This bill does not substantially increase the ability to prosecute willful exposure of an individual to HIV. Further, this bill will open the door to numerous suits based on the inherent fuzziness of the parameters of this bill and its component elements. It is fraught with potential for abuse by unhappy partners or people with grudges, and I believe unconstitutionally puts the burden of proof of innocence on the accused person. We strongly urge you all to vote against Senate Bill 17. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nenzel. I'd like to go now to to Fairbanks. I think the other two folks in Anchorage are there for questions only. Go back to Fairbanks, and we have Ms. McCorkdale, Ms. Carey, and Mr. Binkley. Let's start with Bonnie. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for this opportunity.
You bet.
I'm here today to urge you to reject Senate Bill 17 and any similar effort to criminalize HIV transmission. I've worked in the HIV prevention field for almost 10 years, and I'm currently the executive director of the Interior AIDS Association. Reducing the spread of HIV is a public health issue, not an issue that can or should be addressed by the criminal justice system. Sound public health policy encourages people to get tested, notify partners of potential risks, get treatment if needed, and to learn how to protect others. SB 17 will discourage people from obtaining HIV tests and other potentially life-saving services. Since knowledge in this case means that they risk prosecution for engaging in what we most normally think of as basic human behavior. HIV is preventable. People can, in fact, protect themselves against HIV, but they must take responsibility for their own behavior, and they must have the information available on what the method is. This bill puts the responsibility on a certain segment of the population. It does not hold us all responsible for the effort to protect everyone and the effort to protect ourselves. I have a real question about one portion of it. Since the Secretary of Health and Social Services and the National Institutes of Health recently confirmed that syringe exchange programs reduce the spread of HIV, I'm curious about the language in the section dealing with injection equipment. It says exchanging non-sterile equipment will be a crime. In this case, that may in fact be working against one of the most effective methods for reducing HIV in Alaska. I would like to know about that later on. But most importantly, I think I'd like to say firmly that I believe, as do many of the people who work in prevention, that this legislation discriminates against people and creates a criminal class based on health status. It's wrong, and it will not help in the fight against HIV. Instead, it will set prevention back years. And that is something we simply cannot afford. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. McCorkdale. Questions? Seeing none, let's go to Ms. Carey Cummings. Good morning, Ms. Cummings.
Good morning. Thank you for this opportunity.
You bet.
I'm here with the Interior AIDS Association of Fairbanks, Alaska. I oppose Senate Bill 17, the criminalization of the transmission of the HIV virus. Effective public policy encourages people to make healthy individual choices. It does not limit, prohibit, and prosecute basic biological behavior. SB 17 is not prevention. Prevention is educating the public as to what the risks of contracting HIV are and what an individual can do to protect themselves. For example, Don Shalala and the NIH have stated needle exchange programs are effective prevention in the fight against HIV. By criminalizing the exchange of non-sterile intravenous drug use equipment, those people who are utilizing needle exchange programs would be prosecutable. This would add the number of non-sterile intravenous needles that are on the streets and increase the likelihood of transmission of the virus. I encourage you to reject Senate Bill 17 because of the discriminatory nature of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cummings. And lastly, in Fairbanks, Mr. Andy Binkley. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning. I'm a community outreach worker with the Interior AIDS Association. I'm to speak in opposition to Senate Bill 17. My problem is that there seems to be an attempt to treat HIV transmission different from other diseases, which could be just as life-threatening, such as hepatitis. I can't see how it could help us stigmatize HIV in society more than it already is. And I would hope that more consideration in that would be given by the Senate. Also, I'm opposed to the section about intravenous drug paraphernalia. More and more data that's come to light recently is in support of needle exchange. And this bill, I think, is a step back from this. And I just think more consideration should be given to this.
Thank you, Mr. Binkley, and thanks for all in Fairbanks coming out this morning. I think that on the teleconference network is all that have signed up to testify. I'd like to return to the hearing room, please, and signed up is Ms. Barb Brink. Morning, Ms. Brink.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, sure. Members of the committee. For the record, my name is Barbara Brink. I'm currently acting as the director for the Alaska Public Defender Agency. And I'd like to thank the committee and the legislature as a whole for dealing with this serious issue of HIV transmission. But I'd just like to point out some concerns I have with using criminal laws to try to promote public health instead of using testing, education, and behavior modification. First, I'd like to reassure the committee that indeed the Alaska laws are already sufficiently available to prosecute any person who either intentionally or recklessly transmits the HIV virus. I would have to disagree somewhat with the assessment from 1980 that the only thing you could charge somebody with is reckless endangerment. The Alaska assault statutes vary what you can charge someone with based both on their state of mind, whether they act intentionally, recklessly, or negligently, and on the result of that conduct, the results that are imposed. I think a person, and I'm reading from the assault in the first degree statute, a person commits a crime of assault in the first degree if the person knowingly engages in conduct that results in serious physical injury to another under circumstances manifesting extreme indifference to the value of human life. I believe someone who knowingly engages in that type of behavior can be prosecuted for assault in the first degree. Or assault in the second degree if a person recklessly causes serious physical injury to another person. In fact, our Alaska criminal code is based on the Oregon criminal code, and recently Oregon successfully prosecuted someone for attempted murder when they engaged in such intentional behavior. So I'd like to reassure you that I believe we already have the tools at our disposal to criminally prosecute those people who are knowingly and intentionally and recklessly endangering our citizens. Secondly, I do have concerns with how broadly the statute is drafted. It appears to me that the broad definition of intimate contact makes unlawful not only unsafe sex, but safe sex. There's no provision in there for reasonable prophylactic measures, something that all these education efforts have been trying to encourage. The definition of intimate contact is so broad. I'm a basketball fan. I've been watching the NCAAs. We often see kids being removed from the game. They have a cut. They have something that's bleeding. In order not to expose anybody else on the floor to that, they come out of the game, they get patched up, they go back in. Under this definition, unless they have the ability to affirmatively prove that they let everybody on that floor know that they were HIV positive and that they, those people willingly assumed that risk, that person could be charged as well. It's unclear to me from reading the bill what reasonable efforts would be to inform medical personnel, how out of it is a person who's been in an accident, what about their being unconscious or perhaps not able to make good decisions because of the medical incident involving them. And given universal precautions, this really seems an unnecessary addition to what we want to criminalize. I also have concerns about the non-sterile paraphernalia provision. Needle exchange programs have been proven to be very effective. In fact, Alaska has been chosen to receive a national grant to, again, study the effectiveness of needle exchange programs, and I'm concerned that this would grind that program to a halt because people would be liable for turning in used and non-sterile needles. And finally, my legal concern has to do with the shifting of the presumption of innocence. Normally, when you go to trial with a criminal charge, you're presumed to be innocent, but in this case, to prove an affirmative defense that the other person knew and willingly engaged in that conduct is an impossible task. You often are put in a position of having to prove what was going on in your mind, but it's rarely possible to prove someone knew what was going on in their mind. And so I think it does create an impossible shifting of the burden of proof.